Imagine growing up in a country where your chances of earning more than your parents were virtually guaranteed, 92% for children born in 1940. Now fast forward to those born in 1980, where that chance has plummeted to barely 50%. This stark decline represents what economist Raj Chetty calls the fading American dream, the central concern of David Leonhardt's compelling narrative about America's economic transformation. The book traces how the most prosperous mass economy in history was built after the Great Depression, and how it slowly unraveled starting in the 1970s. At its core lies the concept of democratic capitalism, a system where government guides the economy, recognizing both the power and weaknesses of free markets. This approach delivered remarkable results for nearly 50 years, creating a thriving middle class before America began dismantling it in favor of a more aggressive capitalism that prioritized corporate interests over worker welfare. In 1930s Minneapolis, coal truck drivers led by Swedish immigrant Carl Skoglund fought brutal working conditions using innovative tactics like the Ladies' Auxiliary. When Minnesota's governor Floyd Olson declared martial law during their strike, he uniquely used government authority to benefit workers. This victory sparked unionization across 500 local companies, doubled transportation wages, and contributed to nationwide economic transformation. Union membership tripled to over 30% by the mid-1940s, increasing workers' pay by 10-20% compared to non-unionized workers. Median family income more than doubled between the mid-1940s and mid-1970s after inflation adjustment. Racial pay gap shrank, and America's middle class emerged. Research shows these union-won raises primarily reduced corporate profits rather than increasing unemployment, redistributing wealth without harming economic growth. Paul Hoffman exemplifies corporate America's transformation. Initially opposing the New Deal as fascist control, he later championed corporate reform, advocating for good wages and business serving national interests. By the 1940s-50s, many executives raised wages beyond economic necessity, while Eisenhower's administration maintained New Deal programs and high tax rates, reflecting changes catalyzed by the Depression and World War II. In 1940, Hoffman formed the Committee for Economic Development to promote a consumer economy built on high wages. George Romney embodied this moderation as American Motors CEO, creating the successful Rambler while capping his pay at $225,000, about 40 times typical household income, and refusing excess bonuses. From the 1940s through 1970s, CEO compensation grew more slowly than stock prices, GDP, and median family income. These leaders viewed themselves as part of a patriotic capitalism that had overcome the Depression and won World War II. America's post-war prosperity stemmed from strategic investment, not just wealth redistribution. Despite promising smaller government, Eisenhower expanded federal investment, doubling R&D spending as a percentage of GDP, funding a 40,000-mile highway network, increasing the NIH budget tenfold, and growing the National Science Foundation. The 1957 Sputnik launch accelerated this trend. After the Soviet success and America's Kaputnik failure, Eisenhower appointed MIT's president as the first White House science advisor, funded school construction, created ARPA, later DARPA, and established NASA. These investments yielded enormous dividends. Government-funded basic research the private sector wouldn't, created initial markets through purchasing, then stepped back as private markets matured. The computer industry exemplifies this progression, from government funding early contracts, to NASA developing networks, to DARPA creating the internet. Government research also produced breakthroughs like penicillin, chemotherapy, satellites, jet engines, and microwave ovens. Educational investment proved crucial, with universal high schools and expanded college access giving America the world's most educated workforce. By the late 20th century, American companies dominated numerous global industries through this deliberate investment in future prosperity. The coalition that transformed America ultimately fractured, leading to increased inequality and stagnant living standards. This splintering occurred between the old left of blue-collar union workers and a new left of educated intellectuals. C. Wright Mills challenged post-war economic consensus by rejecting the traditional left's working-class focus, declaring, "Who is thinking and acting in radical ways? All over the world, it is the young intelligentsia." This perspective energized young progressives frustrated with the conservative 1950s. Students for Democratic Society emerged, dropping industrial from their predecessor's name. Their 1962 Port Huron statement acknowledged, "We are people of this generation, bred in at least modest comfort, housed now in universities." Unlike the 1930s-40s progressive movement organized around material concerns like jobs and wages, the New Left prioritized psychological concerns of the privileged. Meanwhile, the labor movement stagnated under leaders like George Meany, who focused on protecting existing members rather than expanding. As labor's membership declined from 33 to 25% during his tenure, Meany remarked, "I don't know, I don't care." By the late 1960s, millions of American workers had no political home. The country split between an ineffective progressive elite movement and self-interested labor unions. The economic crisis that transformed American politics began in October 1973 when Saudi Arabia cut oil production, sending inflation from 2% to 12% by late 1974. With median family income in 1979 falling below 1973 levels, citizens became more receptive to conservative approaches. Ronald Reagan emerged as this movement's standard bearer, championing Jack Kemp's 30% tax cut proposal. Reagan enlisted Charles Walker to win over business leaders, lending credibility to supply-side economics. His deregulation agenda was implemented through strategic agency appointments rather than legislation. To ensure lasting regulatory rollback, Reagan appointed federal judges with free market views who had lifetime tenure. While social program spending remained largely intact, Reagan transformed tax policy. The top marginal rate fell from 70% to 28% during his tenure. His firing of striking air traffic controllers in 1981 signaled new hostility toward labor unions, with membership declining twice as rapidly in the 1980s as in the late 1970s. The American dream lacks political defenders today. The right longs for a 1920s economy, while the left prioritizes social issues over economic ones. Unlike mid-century labor unions, today's progressive groups focus on issues like gun safety and environmentalism rather than wages or corporate power. A new progressive movement must embrace freedom, America's national creed. FDR succeeded by framing policies as liberation from economic royalists, while Reagan promised freedom through smaller government. Today's inequality similarly restricts freedom. Poor children remain trapped, workers can't earn fair wages, and Americans lack the health outcomes and infrastructure of peer nations. We need a grassroots movement centered on economic equality. Labor unions, despite declining to 10% of workers, show promise with approval ratings at 50-year highs. Reforms could strengthen unions through simplified organizing and sectoral bargaining. Progressives must better engage working-class Americans instead of remaining dominated by professionals. Our current problem isn't optimism, but cynicism. Many Americans believe the system is rigged, preserving the status quo. Despite challenges of slow income growth, inequality, and stagnant life expectancy, we can create a better economy. The American dream was invented during the Great Depression, proof that the future need not mirror the past. The question is whether we have the collective will to rebuild it.